Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lifanav el Esav achiv arza seir sedei adom. Then Yaakov sent angels ahead of him to Esav his brother to the land of Seir, the field of Edom. Whether it's actual angels, heavenly angels, or messengers, the word malachim has both connotations, is subject to dispute and can be seen on either side of that coin. We'll talk about that and other things about Parshat Vayishlach shortly.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayishlach, recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Yud Aleph, the 11th of Kislev, Tafshin Ayin Dalid, 5774, corresponding to November 14th. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shima V'Koli Tehiena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Miya Amod Ki Imacha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivarei. Ki Viti Adonai Kiveta Nafshi V'Lidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzarao v'ashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. And in addition to saying that prayer, let us listen to a track from an album by music of Yossi Green. The album is recorded by Shlomi Daskal. And it's called Shades of Green, Yossi Green's Greatest Hits, accompanied by the Shira Orchestra. And this little clip is Achenu. Enjoy it. Think about it. Apply it in your minds to Jonathan Pollard, who is at the point of completing 28 years of imprisonment. Totally unfair, unjust, obscene, and a lot of other things you could say about it. He's been manipulated as a political football for way, way too long. And as the days go by, more and more things are revealed about what came down way back then. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, our brethren, all of Israel, wherever they find themselves in difficult situations, may Hashem take them out from there and bring them to freedom and happiness.
Throw away. Yesu bunin batzor ubasirio ubasirio bem vai a bobo
hard copy of Torah Tidbits this week, the lead tidbit was called The Perfectly Matched Halves. And the topic was about Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, the written Torah and the oral Torah, and the inseparable nature of the two, the inability to understand any of what Torah is without both of its components. And this is a very, very crucial element of Torah Judaism. And the negation of what I'm saying, or the diminishing of the significance of what I'm saying, opens the door in many different ways to a distortion of Judaism. Now, I applied it to a halachic issue, that of the mitzvah of Gid HaNasheh, the prohibition, the only prohibition in the book of Bereishit, the one that's presented in Parshat Vayishlach, and I'm not going to go into all of that now, but I want to apply the same idea on a level of story part of the Torah. We have Yaakov Avinu returning to the land of Israel with his family. He left on his own. He was mugged and robbed very soon after he left. And many years have passed, and during that time he has built a family and considerable wealth, movable wealth, not yet deriving the benefit of the blessings of the land, but that's a separate issue. And having been sent away all those years before to be wary of his brother Esav, who wanted to kill him, he now is in a situation where he will encounter his brother again. And he sends messengers or angels to check out the situation. And they report back to him that Banu el achicha el Esav, we went to your brother Esav, v'gam holech likratcha, and he's also coming towards you, v'arba meot ishimo, and he has a contingent of 400 men with him. Yaakov is exceedingly frightened by this, and he takes three courses of action. He divides his whole camp into two parts, so if one is attacked, the other one will survive. He prays to God for divine help, and he prepares gifts of appeasement for his brother Esav in the form of many animals that he grouped and sent with people to deliver the message of appeasement from Yaakov. And then there's the famous episode of he crossed over the Yabok stream and found that he was missing some things. He went back by himself again to find some little possessions that he had left, and he was attacked by an Ish, which translates as man, but we are taught was the guardian angel of Esav. And Yaakov prevails, but not without injury, and he leaves the situation limping. Then he is actually ready to see his brother. And he sees him coming from a distance, and he prepares his family and his entourage and goes in front of the whole group and bows to Esav 7 times. The Torah then tells us that Esav ran towards him, hugged him, fell on his neck, literal translation, kissed him, and cried. Esav ran toward him, embraced him, fell upon his neck and kissed him, then they wept. So the English translation in the Stone Chumash of Art Scroll is interpreting Vayivku as not something that Esav did, but something that Esav and Yaakov did. Okay. When a sofer writes the word Vayishakehu, and he kissed him, he writes it with dots above each of the letters. That is the Torah scribal version of an asterisk. An asterisk can tell you that even though Roger Maris hit 61 home runs to break Babe Ruth's record at the time, it was in a season of 162 games rather than 154 that Babe Ruth played with. An asterisk can tell you a lot of things, and in this case, the asterisk is dealt with by Rashi, and he brings down 2 well-known opinions, and we need to listen very carefully to the tone of Rashi. On Vayishakehu, Rashi says, Nakud alav, dots above it. V'yesh cholkim b'davar hazeh. There is a dispute on this issue. B'breita d'sifri, in a Mishnah-like writing, Midrashic writing. Yesh shedorshu nekuda zo, lomar shelo nashko b'chol libo. There are those who interpret these asterisk symbols, the dots, above the word, and he kissed him, that his kiss was not sincere, which is to be expected. Amar Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the proponent of the other opinion, and he says as follows, Halacha hi biadua she'esav sone liyakov. It is a well-known law, a fact of life, that Esav hates Yaakov. Ela shenichmeru rachamav ba'ota sha'ah, except that at this moment of their encounter, Esav was overcome by feelings of compassion. Unishako b'chol libo, and he kissed him with all his heart. Now, I've always commented on this, that these are not opposite opinions. It's not one opinion says he didn't mean it when he kissed him, and the other opinion is he did mean it. One was he wasn't sincere, the other was he was sincere. No, this is different. This is, one opinion says he wasn't sincere. By the way, there are Midrashic sources that go further and say that Esav attempted not to kiss Yaakov, but to bite him on the neck and draw and drink his blood. And Yaakov's neck miraculously turned to be solid and resistant like a slab of marble, like a pillar of marble, and Esav broke his teeth. I remember in elementary school the teachers would say that the dots are like the birds you see in cartoons over a person after he gets hit on the head. Not the major point. The major point is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said Esav at this moment was very sincere and kissed him with all his heart. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai prefaces his comment by saying, Halachahi, it is a law. I translate that as fact of life. Biyadua sheya Esav sone leYaakov. It is known that Esav hates Yaakov. And this is not just Esav, but all the Esavs throughout Jewish history. And Esavs throughout Jewish history include people who are actual descendants of Esav, and people who are spiritual heirs of Esav. A hatred of the Jewish people is endemic in the Esav personality and character of many, many people in many nations. Remember that Esav's grandson was Amalek, and we have Midrashic sources that say that Esav put his grandson on his knee, so to speak, and said, look, I've tried and have not been successful to vanquish Yaakov. I leave it to you to handle the situation to Yaakov's descendants. And that's where we have Vayavo Amalek Vayilachim im Yisrael Birfidim, Amalek, grandson of Esav, that nation, attacked the straggling, weaker people among the Jewish people who had just come out of Egypt. And we attribute to that kind of an attack, one that doesn't have a valid purpose except a hatred of the Jew. And this is not once upon a time, a long time ago, but this is unfortunately a story that we live with every day. Just yesterday, as I'm sure most of you know, a young Israeli soldier was sitting on the bus and he dozed off and he was stabbed to death by an Arab. But it's not just an Arab. It's a culture that continues to breed hatred against Israelis and Jews from infancy throughout kindergarten and school years and high school, on television, in the mosques. I am not saying that every single Arab hates all the Jews. I am saying that the hatred is part of the Esav culture in this world. Now let me go back to what I said at the beginning here. If you read just the printed word, the written word of the Bible, it doesn't look like that. It looks like a very emotional, tear-jerking reunion of brothers that were estranged from each other years before, grew to adulthood, each with his own family, each with his own prospects, and they were being reunited. Esav ran to Yaakov. He hugged him. He kissed him. Leave him alone. And he cried. It's a wonderful thing. That's what I mean by a distortion if you read just the written word. Because when Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is making a statement, Halacha hi biyadua she'esav sone liyaakov, that is part of the body of oral Torah, which means it's part of the Torah. Which means no matter how much your emotional feelings are touched by this lovely story of reunion, and then Esav offers to join forces and to go slow like Yaakov does because of all of his flocks, and Yaakov rebuffs him, and then you go back a couple of sedras and you see Esav, he was tired, he came from the field, and he said, give me some of that stuff that you're making. And Yaakov stole the birthright from him, and then he stole the blessing from him. That's the problem with reading part of the Torah. You need the Torah Shebichtav with the Torah Sheba'al Peh. You need it in halachic situations, and you need it in agadic situations. You cannot, we cannot, no one can understand what the Torah is saying without a confidence, faith, and trust in the oral law and the oral Torah and oral tradition, to have that confidence to say, this is the real meaning of what it says in the written word, and I believe that with all my heart and all my soul. Now, when within the Torah tradition there are different opinions, then we can look at either of those and be on solid ground, whichever you choose. So, it wasn't insincere, Kiss. It was sincere, but remember, Esav Sone Liakov. And it holds today whenever there is that kind of embrace, be it on the White House lawn or any place else. We need to be exceedingly weary of the Esavs of this world, and we do not have to give the benefit of the doubt. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayishlach. You are listening to Torah Tibbetz audio for Parshat Vayishlach. I would like now to sort of segue into a pre-Chanukah talk. Next week, Yirtzeh Hashem, Parshat Vayeshev will be a lot of Chanukah. And then on Chanukah itself, Thursday will be the first day and the eighth day. We'll talk about Chanukah, but not in the preparatory way, but in the enjoy the holiday as it is and look at it in a different way or whatever. Anyway, I want to use Parshat Shavua, not just this one, but last one and the next one and the one after that, as an introduction or a background to Chanukah. And I need to say first that the calendar dates, the festivals of the calendar, the holidays of the calendar, the holy days, the fast days, whatever, do not have an obvious, necessary correlation to Parshat HaShavua. One thing has nothing to do with the other, proof of which is when Pesach comes, and one of the days of Pesach, which of course it has to be, is a Shabbat, then we don't read the weekly Torah portion that would be scheduled for then. Then we read a special portion that our sages designated for reading during Pesach. And the same thing for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and in Chutz La'aretz Shavuot as well. When Shabbat is a special kind of day, it often preempts the weekly reading because it doesn't have to do anything with the weekly reading. With that said, we still look at Parshat HaShavua, the weekly portion, and say, can I find a connection between this and the date on the calendar? And it is amazing that we can usually find something significant to say. So as far as Chanukah is concerned, if Chanukah is the celebration of our victory over our enemies, then we take a look at Parshiot HaShavua these past weeks and coming weeks, and we see that there was a confrontation between Avraham and Paro in Egypt, and Avimelech in Gerar, and Yitzchak are similar, and Yaakov with his problems with Esav and with Lavan, and then again with Esav. And then next week, so I really should tell you this then, but I'm telling it to you now, you have the problems within the family between Yosef and his brothers. And then you go back to the Hanukkah story, or go ahead to the Hanukkah story, and you see that we have an encounter, confrontation between the Jewish people and a foreign culture that was attempting to take us over and assimilate us into itself, the Greeks. But we also see infighting within the people of Israel between not the Yevanim, but the Mityavnim. The Mityavnim were Jews that Hellenized, were Jews that said, maybe it's time we get rid of the old-fashioned Torah and we adopt the newfangled and very appealing Greek culture. And others who tenaciously maintained their faith in the Torah and rejected the attempt to be assimilated into Greek culture. And this created a situation which was very close to being a civil war. So if in Bereshit we go from Nimrod trying to get rid of Avraham and the clash of the cultures in Sodom with Avraham's family and the problem with Lavan, Rivka's brother, Yaakov's father-in-law, Esav, his twin, and yet we don't consider that part of the family because the family was only forming at that time, and by definition of the Torah, Avraham was succeeded by his spiritual heir, Yitzchak, not Yishmael. Yitzchak was succeeded by his spiritual heir, Yaakov, and not Esav. And Yaakov, eventually, the tradition continued with all of his sons, the tribes, as they are known, in a very different way. So, with a background that's much older than the Hanukkah story, which itself is already 2300 or whatever years old, and this is even older than that, you do have parallels from the Torah reading to the calendar. So when we speak of clash between brothers, we're not strangers to that, and it didn't invent itself in the Hanukkah story. And clash against those who try to assimilate us didn't begin with the Hanukkah story, but it's been around since we were a small family. We had that in last week's Sedra. I'm sorry, in this week's Sedra, with Shechem and his father Hamor, who wanted to make an agreement with Yaakov and his family of, let's become one people. Your children will marry our children, and vice versa, and we'll do business together, and we'll culturally mix. We have to be wary of that as well. We are a separate nation, on purpose, and no matter how much people tire of being different and therefore being picked on. I always remember that line from Fiddler on the Roof of, we know we're the chosen people, but maybe God, you'll choose someone else sometimes. That's not what we are. We are the chosen people, and it comes along with a lot of baggage, and it comes along, as I mentioned earlier, with the concept of Esav Sone LeYaakov. And the only way, until the Messianic time, the only way that we will not be hated the way we are is if, chas v'shalom, God forbid, we cease to exist. Then the dead Jewish people would be proclaimed as having a high proportion of Nobel laureates and a high proportion of high-tech startups and inventions, and everybody will cheer for the people, the Jewish people. But that's not what we want, and that's not what's going to happen. We want to be around on the scene, and then to have the world be convinced that we are truly here to show them the way to do things, and they need not fear, and they need not hate, but it'll take a longer time. We don't know how long. But that's pretty much the connection. Let's move on to some of the preliminaries for Hanukkah. Okay, with less than 2 weeks left to Hanukkah, Wednesday night, 2 weeks from last night, as of this recording, will be the first candle of Hanukkah. The first day is Thursday. Big to-do on the internet. Everyone's sending everyone copies of different things about the coincidence of the first day of Hanukkah and Thanksgiving. We'll talk about that and how the calendar happens to be like that next week, Amir Tzashem. And there's some comedians that are getting into the act with the clash between Thanksgiving and Hanukkah, and someone else developed the topic, the title of a menorah, which is a combination of a menorah and a turkey. One way or the other, we'll get there for part of next week. I want to now get into the mood of Hanukkah and then spend some time talking about it by playing a track from an album called Shalhevet HaNeshama 9. Contains Hanukkah songs and Hallel songs. And this particular song that you're about to hear is the first, second, third, fourth, fifth stanza of Ma'oz Tzur, the famous Hanukkah song. But this is the one, this is the stanza that deals with the story of Hanukkah. The point of Ma'oz Tzur is to say that in different generations, different things happened of significance to the Jewish people, and that's all part of the Hanukkah story, because the Hanukkah story represents a whole bunch of other kind of things. In any event, this is the stanza that begins, Yevanim nikpitzu alai. In English, then the Greeks gathered against me in the days of the Hasmoneans. They broke down the walls of my towers and defiled all the oils. But from the last remaining flask a miracle was wrought for your beloved. Therefore the sages ordained these 8 days for song and praise. Listen to the song, and then we'll talk more about it. We'll be right back. One of my favorite subtopics of Hanukkah is the question of the 8 days of the holiday. The famous question is based on the story of Hanukkah, that after the Hashmonaim had their military victory, they came in to clean up and purify the Beit HaMikdash and restart temple service, and they found only 1 day's supply of olive oil that had been uncontaminated, and it would take 8 days to get a new supply, and that 1 day supply miraculously lasted 8 days, and therefore we have 8 days of Hanukkah with the lighting of the menorah each night. That's fine, and that's what we'll do for most people, but there are questions. For example, if you've got 1 day supply and it lasts for 8 days, then you have 7 days of miracle, not eight. So why do we celebrate eight? Why not seven? A more fundamental question is, who says that the number of days you make a holiday matches the number of days in a story? It doesn't go like that. It's usually, although it's hard to say usually because we don't have all that many now on the calendar, but the length of time of a holiday is not dependent upon an element of the story. We don't say Pesach is 10 days because of the 10 plagues that God rained down on Egypt. We don't say that Shavuot is 5 days because of the 5 books of Moses in the Torah. It's just not, doesn't work like that. So our sages, now Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are all biblical holidays, so there's no question for us about why they were fixed on a certain length. We understand that however we understand it, but it wasn't a human decision. When it came to Hanukkah, it was a human decision. The sages at the time decided that the celebration should be 8 days long. Not 1 day, not two, not three, not seven, not 12. One period, 8 days. And the song that we just played, the stanza of Maos Tzur, says, Yemei Vina, men of deep understanding established the 8 days of Hanukkah to be observed. Now, it does not take deep understanding to say 8 days of miracle, 8 days of Hanukkah. That would not be something that we would praise our sages for their deep understanding. But there is an element in eight, which is very, very much something that we salute our sages for having designated Hanukkah specifically at that length. So I didn't discuss now the different answers to 7 days of miracle, why eight. There are plenty of answers, and they're all beside the point as far as I'm concerned, except for the message that is conveyed specifically because Hanukkah has 8 days. The clash between the Yevanim, the Greek Hellenistic culture, and Torah and the Jewish people was based on an issue of how to view a mitzvah like Brit Milah, circumcision. Circumcision was one of the 3 key mitzvot that the Yevanim banned from Jewish practice because they knew how significant it was, they knew the message of Brit Milah, and they knew how inspired we would continue to be with it. And therefore they said, you could do a lot of other things, but you can't circumcise your children. Now this was the only example of a Greek ban. Usually their approach was, let people do whatever they want, just take on the Greek culture, but this is one that they actually disagreed with. What am I saying? If an enemy realizes that Shabbat is a very important observance for the Jewish people, for the unity of the Jewish people, for the connection to God of the Jewish people, and they ban it as the Greeks did, it's not because they disagree with the idea that the world was created in 7 days. It doesn't bother them, that aspect of it. And the same thing goes with Kiddush HaChodesh, and the same thing goes with other mitzvot. The mitzvah, which was like a cause celebre in the pre-Hanukkah story, was circumcision, because that mitzvah the Greeks abhorred. They believed in nature. They believed in physical beauty of the body. They believed in athletics and art and sculpture. And to them, it was a terrible, terrible thing what the Jewish people do of mutilating their baby boys at 8 days old. And therefore, they banned it as an anti-Greek culture thing, not just for its role in preserving Jewish unity and identity. That's too. But because they picked on that and they said, if the world was created in 7 days, that's the natural order of things, what are you going and changing things and adding an eighth day of circumcision? Shabbat is the natural flow of things in this world, the 7 days of the week. And the eighth day was anathema to the Greeks, and it was very important to us. The Greeks felt that we were mutilating the body, that we were perverting the perfection with which the human being and everything else was created. And we say that God gave us this mitzvah, among other reasons, as a token act of our completion of our physical form, and challenges us to make a similar kind of improvement to our spiritual form, and that's a lifelong process. It's not leave it be, nature is nature and it's perfect. Nature is not perfect, and it's purposely not perfect, in order for us to be part of that process of creation and of maintenance of this world. And that means that when our sages said Chanukah shall be celebrated for 8 days, and then they went further and they said, we're going to mark that in each day by saying, here's your Chanukiah that has 8 places. You light 1 candle the first night, 2 the second, 3 the third, etc. Because you are counting. Once you count, the question is, to what are you counting? And the answer is, we are counting to 8. Because 8 is our statement, and 8 is the symbol of our victory over the Chashmonaim. Of the Chashmonaim over the Yevanim. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, will have a lot more on Chanukah in the next 3 shows. And for now, let me just wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.